Welcome to the dsmith.org podcast for February 8th, 2006. This is a technical discussion of my technical tidbit of February 2006 at www.dsmith.org titled Construction of a Coaxial Antenna for Troubleshooting. I'm Doug Smith. In this article, I was looking for a way to simulate mobile phone interference to a device. The trouble with using a mobile phone is that you can't really control it. There are a number of frequencies it can operate on in low and high bands, and power levels depending on signal strength of the base station. You have no control over any of these parameters. The only way to control it is to buy a US $30,000 box and go into a enclosed shielded chamber so it doesn't see any base stations, and then you can control the phone. But that's a pretty difficult thing. That's a hard-to-find instrument. It's expensive. And I was looking for a less expensive way of simulating the same effect. And so what I did was to build an antenna, which is also described earlier in my website, an earlier article dealt with induced voltage from nearby small metal ESD from roughly a year ago. And that's referenced in the technical tidbit article itself. So I made an antenna similar to that. And the way I made it was to extend the center connector of a coax and fold back the shield. So I start off by cutting away the outer covering of the coax, a quarter wavelength at the frequency of interest, and we'll talk about that in a second. Then I take a small pointed object, like a screwdriver, a small one, and work the braid of the braids out of the shield, and so that I have just parallel wires, and fold that back over the outer covering of the coaxial cable. And then, because there's a lot of space in between the wires, and depending how much shield you actually have, it's probably best to cover that with copper tape so I have a solid metal surface there. So what I'm left with is, at the end of the coax, I appear to have some copper tape going for a quarter wavelength, followed by insulated center conductor sticking out for another quarter wavelength. So first, let's describe how to determine that quarter wavelength. I think a lot of people listening to this know that, but there's a catch to it. First, if you divide the frequency in megahertz into 300, so 300 divided by the frequency of megahertz, you get a wavelength. So let's divide that by 4. But that's not enough, because that's the wavelength in free space, assuming the speed of light in free space. But on a wire, it travels slower. So my experience, 0.8 is a good factor to start with, maybe a little more or less than that. So we'll take the number we get from 300 divided by frequency in megahertz and divide by 4 and then multiply that result by 0.8, and we get a number. And it's best to plan on that number being a little bit greater than what you really want, because it's much easier to trim an antenna shorter than to make it longer again. So figure out your frequency, compute to be a little longer, and then the way you tell if you've got the right frequency is look at the reflected power when you're driving this thing. Most amplifiers and other driving devices can do that, or there are certainly easy arrangements to do that. Then if you change the frequency, you'll get a minimum reflected power at some frequency, and that's what it's tuned to. And so if you need to make it a little higher, you trim it a little bit, and so forth. So now we have an antenna. It's tuned to the frequency. What am I going to do with it? I suppose before we talk about that, we maybe should cover one more piece of theory here, and that's how this antenna actually works, which I find amazing. I still find it amazing. The current coming out the center conductor of the coax is matched by a current inside the shield, and it's spread all around inside the shield. There's a picture of this in the article. As the center conductor current exits the shielded area into its extension, the shield current folds back over the outside of our copper tape that's covering the shield wires. And then something very interesting happens, and I still find this amazing. And that is, the shield of the original coax forms a center conductor with respect to the shield which I folded back over the outer covering of the coax, which is really the same piece of metal, but it's folded back over the insulation. And it probably makes a very low impedance coax, because that's a pretty big center conductor. And in addition to this, skin effect means the inner surface and the outer surface of a piece of metal like a shield are totally independent. We can have currents flowing in opposite directions on the same piece of metal on different sides. So the current that's coming inside the shield folds back around and flows on the copper tape. Now, this parasitic coax, which I call it a parasitic coax, it's made by the shield inside the shield of the quarter wavelength that we folded back. That parasitic coax is really shorted at the point where the semiconductor exits because it's folded over. And it's a quarter wavelength long. So if I look into that from the back side of it, a quarter wave back on the cable, it looks infinite. It's infinite impedance. A shorted quarter wave line looks infinite impedance. So it appears to have no inner surface. So the current that's flowing on that shield will stop there. It will not fold around and go inside in between the two shields. And therefore, I really have a dipole antenna, the semiconductor being half of it, the folded back shield the other half. You could think of the inside of the coax as just being a 50-ohm source connected between those two, and if you think of it that way, you can see it's really a dipole. If I slide a current probe along this, as I'm going down the coax, I see nothing, 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 and get just to the end of my folded back shield, start to see a little bit. As I go right to the point where the center conductor exits, I'll see a lot of current, and as I move off onto the center conductor exposed, I will see a lot of the same current, and then it will gradually go to zero at the end. It'll be symmetric around that midpoint. Because the current doesn't fold around at the end of the folded back coax, because of that infinite input impedance, there's no common mode current on the cable, which is really great. Now, if you don't cut this thing just the right length, there will be a little common mode current. So to protect against that, I'd put a few ferrites on there just to be sure. So, okay, now we got our antenna. What are we going to do with this thing? Well, suppose you have a product that you're wondering if it's going to be affected by mobile phone. As an example, you could also think of Wi-Fi and a number of other wireless devices. But mobile phones can be up to 600 milliwatts. So what if we take, the antenna that I've shown in my article is tuned to roughly the upper band around 1.8 gigahertz. And I'll feed it 600 milliwatts. Might want to do this in a chamber so I don't interfere with things. That should not be a level that would be dangerous because cell phones do that and we hold them to our head. So it should be okay. But I'm not sure I would put my head down on the table on the antenna. But I don't think standing next to it will be an issue. Now, if I feed 600 milliwatts to this antenna, a dipole like this is more like 70 ohms, and typically all the instrumentation and coax around an EMI lab is 50 ohms. So allow that there'll be a little bit of reflection in there. So you may have to set the generator for a little bit more than 600 milliwatts. You'd probably want a forward power of 600, and there'll be a little bit of reflected. So now we've got this antenna that radiates about like a cell phone would. Probably not necessary to modulate it. It's probably more of the RF effect, but if you wanted to, you could put various kinds of modulation that might simulate the cell phone or just the sine wave or something. When I've done this, we just generally don't bother putting any modulation on it. So now you just hold this antenna that's radiating near the device you want. And depending on what distance, you might hold it a few inches away. If it's something that might be, for instance, in a purse with a cell phone and other things like my wife has, it might be right in direct contact with the phone. So you might want to lay this little antenna right on the surface of what it is you want to test. Sort of a handy gadget, and we've done some troubleshooting with this, and it's a great little gadget. Again, you might want to do this in a chamber to avoid interference to other things nearby. I don't think it needs to be anechoic, especially if we're talking about putting this thing a small fraction of a centimeter away from the device I want to test, because the path length out to the wall and back again is meters, and I've got the little antenna less than a centimeter from the device. I don't think we have to worry about too much reflections off the wall in this case. Now, suppose you want to raise the power a little bit and see what kind of margin we've got. Let's just crank this thing up to a few watts. There I'd begin to be careful about the level of the field. So if you want to crank the power up, just be careful that power levels above mobile phone powers, 600 milliwatts. At some point it will become dangerous, and you should familiarize yourself with levels that are generally considered safe and field strengths and so forth before I would do that. But up to cell phone power levels, I think we're okay. I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and thanks for listening.